dissolved in the sea, merges in the sea. Oh. And then what is the use of this Ganga? Till then you can take your baths and feel yourself to be purified. But afterwards, when it once meets the Ganga, you cannot. The sea is more valuable than the Ganga. Let men come and go. Let princes men and come. Politicians may come and go. Let Alexanders may come and go, you see. But the nation will be there. The institutions will be there. So the whole is will be remain and not depart. This is our usual belief. Pringle Patterson opposes this and says, no, there is personal immortality also. There is not the impersonal immortality, there is the personal immortality. That all these persons who ever die, they live. And that is why in history, what history shows, Alexander is still living. Napoleon is still living. Edmund Burke is still living. Johnson is still living. Are they not living in history? Their biographies are there. You can go to the library, take out the book, read book. Johnson's Life by Boswell. You feel as if Johnson is still living with you. Is it not a sort of personal immortality that we have? And there is no reply. We have. We live after our death. By what? By what we do in this life. Longfellow said that we can live on these footprints on the sands of time, he says. So many have gone. But let us have some footprints on the sands of time so that we can also live in the same immortal way as others have lived. So Pringle Patterson has accepted everything, excepting this, namely personal immortality, so that individual is as real as the whole. That is his conclusion. The whole is real, no doubt, but why do you say that the individuals are lost? Are merged, are dissolved. No, they are not dissolved, they are not lost, they are there in their own individuality. So when Bhavsankar says that there is individuality and value, he speaks only of individuality so far as the life is there. But no, beyond life, beyond death, you see, there is this personal immortality as asserted by Pringle Patterson. And I just make one more, namely of Rice. Rice on the other continent, America. He was a professor in the Yale University. And he came at a time, as you may be knowing, you can know, many of you at least, who that man? The cinema actor who died recently in the Gold Rush. No? What is that man? The Three Musketeers?
Alexander Dumas.
No. Oh, that humorous.
Oh, yes.
I am so famous and so.
Charlie Chaplin.
Thank you, very. Charlie Chaplin. Now, he was there when in California there was the gold rush. And at that time, Royce was also there. And Royce went there. Just to find out gold. Why should every man goes there? Just as every man goes from New York to the free state in the West for the purpose of divorce and for the purpose of remarriage. In 10 minutes they get a divorce and in 10 minutes they remarriage. So people, many men go from the New York to that place and they get their wives or husbands divorced immediately. Here they will require probably 1 year or 2 years in New York. But there in that state, you see, this is meant only for divorce and marriages, and they give all sorts of, you see, luxurious feasts and everything free. And these persons spend thousands of dollars go there. What cannot be done by thousands of dollars in New York, that can be done within 10 minutes. If you have to fly over there, just put in that I want to get myself divorced from this naughty woman. Naughty woman. Oh, yes, divorced. And that is true in New York. Remarried with ex, remarried with the eighth husband, this is tenth woman, it's all right. People go for that purpose today, but Royce went for another purpose. Royce and his mother went there, and father, they were most devoted. And it was a time when West Indians were there. And West Indians would, as soon as they would see a white person, they would kill him. And white persons would kill the West Indies. Even now the struggle is not over, you see. But it is going on, but very on a very, very small scale and in negligible manner. But at that time it was very much. So his mother, Sarah, and his father, and mother Sarah and he went there, find out. Of course they didn't find out gold at all, you see. But there were persons coming from the opposite side, West Indians, about 20 or 50 of them. And then mother Sarah, you see, the boy, Royce, prayed to God, save us from the... And probably God must have heard their prayer, and the West Indians went, as if they have not seen these persons. Otherwise they would have killed it. So that was the... Incidentally, I am telling you, that how Royce was saved on account of the devotion of his mother, when he had gone with his mother Sarah to the California in find out rush. Charlie Chaplin had also gone there, gold rush. And then he came, and he became a great scholar, and then he became the first professor in the Yale University of Philosophy. I had the good fortune of seeing that university and the library there, which consists of more than 2.5 lakhs of books. Now, compare your library with that library. For 40 years, I didn't get a book here in India, and I got it there within 10 minutes. Man the Unknown, he got the Nobel Prize. Man the Unknown. If you find that book, you read it. It's most pleasant, you see. Dr. Man the Unknown, I forgot the name of the author, but this is the title of the book, Man the Unknown. I got that book in America in the Yale University Library, of which, you see, he was, Professor Rice was there. And he has written 2 volumes as the word individual of individuals. Individual of individuals. Now, Pringle Patterson and Bosanquet have made personalism and individualism as the marks of reality. He took that thread. Because there was far money there, of course. We cannot bring dollars here, or we cannot send our rupees there. That is all right. That is the political wisdom. But so far as learning is concerned, there is no barrier even today, you see. Galbraith was brought here. Galbraith was a professor in Boston University. But Nixon picked him up and brought him as an ambassador, Galbraith. He has written 2 books. Which one of which is in your library, but the other is not, you see. One of which is in your library, the Affluent Society, and other is The Uncertainties of the Future. I read these 2 books of Galbraith in America. Of course, they are not books of philosophy, but it was a pleasant reading. It is just like novel. And you gave me 1 book from your library, but the other is not here in the library, you see. Such is our poverty of intellect in India. We do not know what these great persons have written. Galbraith, The Affluent Society is one, and The Uncertainties of the Future. The Uncertain Future. One wonderful book. But by the way, so what I say is, there is no barrier between this. And Royce, for example, was astounded by what Bradley and Bosanquet had written. Then why should we mention Royce? He has his own contribution to his philosophy. He was much influenced by the pragmatic philosopher William James. Naturally, and pragmatic philosophy means the essence of that is whatever is useful is true. Not whatever is true is useful, but whatever is useful is true. I give an example of that. You tell your boy or your baby, small, not to go in darkness. Oh, there is ghost. And then becomes awful. Now, this is untruth. There is no ghost in darkness. You know it well. And yet you unnecessarily tell the boy, oh, there is ghost, don't go into the darkness. And it doesn't. So it is useless. And yet it is true for the boy. You don't tell him, you see, you could have told him, don't go into darkness. Perhaps there may be a scorpion. It may bite you. You could have told that, but instead of that, you tell, oh, don't go into darkness because ghosts inhabit darkness. And then the boy believes that. and doesn't go into darkness. Of course, you win your point that you, the boy doesn't go into darkness, but on account of a foolish idea. You see, the useless thing is true, appears to be true. The true should be appear to be useful and not useful. But the pragmatism, most of it pragmatism is based upon this. Whatever is useful is true. That is why it has been flourishing in India. Black marketing is useful, therefore black marketing prospers. Smuggling is useful, therefore smuggling is useful. Cheating is useful, dishonesty is useful. You see, doing harm to furniture, burning these things, strikes are useful. And therefore all this is prospering in India. Just the opposite is, truth is useful, if you say, then it will not be pragmatism. You see, pragmatism means that works very well. That works very well. You see, that is true, pragmatism. And that was taught by William James even, not by Pierce and others, but it was taught by William James also, such a great man, a psychologist, a doctor, a physician, great physician of Vermont. And he, Royce, became to a certain extent victim of that philosophy. So what is there? You act, and involuntary in your will, for example, there resides the reality. Whatever you will to burn a house, then in that the reality exists, in burning and doing harm to others. In that, you burn 10 houses, and then you are a hero, and everybody will fear you. Oh, perhaps he may burn my house. And in that way you gain Ratam Bindyat Ratam Chindyat Puryadba Rasabadhvanim Yena Kena Prakarena Prasiddha Purushova. You either tear a piece of cloth, tearing cloth, suit of a man, or burn some useful, break the glass panes, and you become a great warrior. You become, is that the way of thing? You do some construction. No, but Gatam Bindyat, Patan Chindyat, Kuryadvar, or you bray like a donkey in the streets, or you go naked. Will they not know you? They will know you. And you will be as famous, such a man, and you will, photograph will come. Oh, my photograph has come. And you will tell your friends, this is how I became famous, and you too do that way. That you will teach. And India, it has been taught sufficiently. I am nauseating about this freedom in India. It is license. It is unbridled movement. No, that is ought not to be. But Royce said that. And then he said that everything comes to the willing. Thinking, feeling. What is it that you feel? It has no bearing upon what you do. What is it about you think? You may think and think every good things, but you do the bad things. Just as Pope has said, I know the truth, I honor it too, but I do the opposite. Poet Pope has said, I know the truth, and I respect it too, and I condemn the falsehood, and yet the wrong pursue. So what you do ultimately is that you are pursuing the wrong thing. That is right. And he has justified, or else, not exactly the bad things, but he has justified by means of saying what is in your mind, internal meaning and the external meaning. Just as Fichte says there is a self and then it has produced a not self. So similarly Royce says, what is in your mind? What is it that you want to do? What is your meaning? For what do you stand? There is that constitutes the internal meaning. And what you do by an act of will, which will be just the opposite of what you are, what you mean to do. You mean to do a good thing in life. And you do accordingly, then reality lies in that, he says. Reality lies in doing something which is in your mind. So when the internal and external, they coalesce together, then there is reality. The internal and the external meaning and the internal meaning, they must coincide. They must overlap each other. They must be one, soldered together, and then it is reality. That is the voluntarist aspect of everything that constitutes reality according to Rice. And then it is not with man, myself alone, it is with the society, it is with the state, and it is with God. What does the church want? What does the state want? you see. And if I am doing something in my mind which will be just the same which the state wants to do, which the church wants to do, then of course I am having a reality of it. And in that way, what I want, it will be honored. It will be honored, for example, by God or not, it must be honored. Meaning whatever is in the mind of God, and whatever is in my mind, whatever is in the mind of the social whole, whatever is in the mind of the political whole, and if that whole meaning is embodied in some individual act, then that constitutes reality. That is Royce's of the two volumes. I have given a summary of that this is what is Royce means. And he has, at the last, he has given, this is what constitutes loyalty. This is what constitutes loyalty. For example, if you love a woman, and that is your internal meaning, and if out of social fear, if out of public censure, if of political fears, and you do not then get yourself married with that girl, or win her love, then of course you are frustrated from reaching the reality. But if you win her love also, and if you and she then flout what is the public censure on everything, then of course you get the real thing what you want. There is a coalition, there is, you can say, the equalization of the internal and the external meaning. The external meaning comes out of volition, the internal meaning comes out of thought and feeling. When thought and feeling and volition, they are together, there is reality. And this is possible with man and man with God and man with nature. He gives a beautiful example at the last, and with that I finish. The loyalty. He has written a book known as Philosophy of Loyalty, an excellent book. Now you perhaps do not know what are the excellent books in the world. And then you go to the library and pick everything and get it. Nonsense. Get it out. I shall go. And you come out of the library. No, don't do so. You go to every book. You see, you take hundreds of books, you throw them out, but you will come across with some good book. And then speak your mind. Go to the library every day and then do it. What I was saying is, this philosophy of loyalty, for example, is one of the best books which is by Royce. One of my students has written a doctorate thesis under my guidance. Unfortunately, he is now no more. He's dead. But I got him book from America for him. And from a relative of Royce, long distant relative of Royce, he sent it to us. He sent a photograph of Royce also, you see. And then that student had utilized it and sent it back, you see. The Americans are so good. They don't say, they are bound up with us with ties of learning, you see, not ties of money, not dollars, you see. We prize dollars and not their books, because we have got a hatred for English language and we have nothing in Hindi. Therefore, we are bankrupt in both ways. That is not to be done. You learn, if you don't know English ABC, you learn today, begin it today. So that English is the worldwide language. If you don't go to the library and then burn, just as the Muslims burned Alexandria, why should you not burn this library? Libraries all over India, I say. Because they contain 99.5% of English language, so you should burn them. That is not the ideal. I'm not teaching you that, but that is as good as that. If there are books written in Hindi, in the encyclopedias, I have got at my place a treasure of, it costs not less than 7,000 rupees. And by black market it will be by 12,000. But I don't wish to part with that stock, you see. I wonder if anybody has got that, if your university has got it, but I have in my personal possession, you see. Encyclopedia Britannica, wherein you will find everything, whatever, under the sun. In English, of course, not in Hindi, not in Rashtrabhasha. Because Rashtrabhasha, you will get Upanyas and some nonsensical verses, you see, written by most ordinary persons. That is all our language. This is, don't be satisfied with that. Be loyal. Be loyal to whom? Be loyal to the goddess of learning. Don't be loyal to the goddess of wealth, because it comes and goes. We will not understand when it goes. But God, she will be loyal to you. Who? Goddess of learning. Therefore, have love for learning. I shall just tell you, as I said, a Royce's example. of loyalty. There was a king, and all the citizens of this country were going to pay homage to the king. And a child was there, of hardly of 8 or 10 years old, or 10, and he too was going with a bouquet and presenting to the king. The way was long, and the boy became tired, and he slept. He slept on the way. Well, all others went and gave their homages, paid their homages to the king, and this boy was sleeping on the roadside. Roy says he was the first to pay his homage to the king, because he had gone with the motive of paying homage to the king. And on the road he slept. That was not his fault. But he has paid his bouquet before everybody else has done it. That is the loyalty, he says. Have your motives at least, you see, good, unsoiled by any falsehood. Keep your mind holy. The holiness does not act in the actual execution or the performing of the act. It lies in your motives. So motive is that which creates the will, and will is that which creates the acts. So let your motives and your mind be free of all anything, and then you will be loyal to God. Loyal to Jesus. Ultimately, he has said, we should be loyal to God. Thank you.
Friends, Professor Date has covered so many philosophers today. I think 7 philosophers. 3 of them are the post-Hegelians, post-Kantians, and 4 of them the neo-Hegelians or the post-Hegelians. Tomorrow we again meet at 8:15 a.m. Tomorrow is a Sunday, but we meet on Sunday, and I request you to attend this lecture if you feel the value of the lecture, if you feel it convenient to come. Well, I yes, sir.
Because I may be idle.
No, Professor Date is now in the full tempo of his address, and he does not want to make any exception on Sunday, so that the momentum is not lost, the intellectual momentum, and the audience is also requested to follow him in the momentum. So that is what he wishes. So I request you to attend the lecture tomorrow, although it is Sunday. I once again thank Professor Date on my behalf and behalf of my colleagues and on behalf of the London audience once again for giving us, or rather, the outpourings of his soul. They are not mere lectures. They are not mere intellectual explanations of certain philosophers. They are the outpourings of his soul. So I once again thank him for the lecture. So we meet now. The students of MA philosophy, they can attend their classes after the lecture finishes at 9:30 or so. Today also they can attend the class. Professor Date, ladies and gentlemen, Professor Date has been delivering lectures for the last 6 days, 5 days, and he has covered the major philosophers, the lampos, as he has called them, of his spiritual life. And now he proposes to embark upon the
you will be honest about
standing between you and the London speaker. I request Professor Date to continue
his series of address.
Professor Sharma, his colleagues and students of the department, and ladies and gentlemen. I have made a survey during the last 5 lectures of 24 philosophers, beginning from Thales and ending with Royce. Now, they constitute only a small fraction of the total number of philosophers. But I have made reference to only these 24 persons. They are legitimately Tirthankaras of the Jains. They are also, I think they are 24 in numbers, and the 24th Tirthankar has yet not arisen. Similarly, I made reference to these 24 from Thales to Royce. And today I am expected to go to the Indian side. Of course, not with the lighthouses as yet, but with the lampposts again. But before that, I wish to make another survey from the point of view of criticism of these 24 philosophers. I have taken one thread only, namely of the spiritual life. If they have said something about God, then I have made reference to them. If anything beyond God, I have omitted them. For example, you know that the Cynics and the Sardinics and the Epicureans and the Stoics have all left. You see. And there will be certain other philosophers also. For example, somebody told me in the morning at Bertrand Russell. What is to be said about him? He married at the age of 92 a beautiful girl of 20. Should I say this? Well, there is no reference of God. There is no reference, and therefore I vomited. He has said something about mind, he has said something about matter, but he has never said a word about God. So, there are so many whom I know, but should I mention them? Not me, because the title is that puts a restriction upon my course of lectures, that lampposts of spiritual life. If I do not find any tinge of spiritual life in any of the philosophers, then it is best to. Even so, I find Marcus Aurelius a great Stoic, you see, and his Meditations. I remember to have purchased his book while I was in the BA. Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. He was a great Stoic. But why should I mention him? Because he has not said anything about God, nothing. He has said about his philosophy of Stoicism only. And this, why should we take into ascetics our ascetics into consideration? Let them be ascetics, what of that? If the ascetics turn to God, then they are important. If they are away from God, I shall omit them. You see. Before passing on, I shall make a few points of criticism. You see. And in the Eleatic school, and again say a certain philosophers from Thales to Parmenides and Zeno and Heraclitus, you find nothing of importance except that they have made reference to finite objects. And or to the fact that it is a matter of change or of a permanence. They are not said much of importance, except what they have said on the two sides of the battle, namely whether there is permanence is real or change is real. Zeno, for example, is the henchman of Parmenides, and I didn't say anything about Zeno because Zeno has negatively put what Parmenides has put it affirmatively. So there is no improvement regarding Zeno's point of view. But there is still one thing to be remembered. Namely, Zeno has made it for the last 20 centuries He has puzzled both philosophers, both physicists and the mathematicians, by saying that if the tortoise is given a star, an advance, then the asterisk cannot overtake it. Is it true? And matter of fact, we find that the asterisk goes far beyond tortoise. And the asterisk has taken rest in the race. Even the tortoise cannot come and win the race. Though it is said that this slow and steady wins the race, it is not possible in practical life. And Zeno has failed to take note of the fact that the tortoise makes its progress point by point, while the asterisk makes its journey by jumps. There is no compatibility, or there is no commensurability between a speed which is going point by point and boyfriend. Is there any commensurability between a train, a Punjab mail even, the fastest train, so the Rajdhani mail, and an aeroplane which goes 500 miles at that speed? Is there any compatibility between the two? Similarly, Zeno has not taken, he was not capable of taking that into consideration. That is, ant goes, for example, on the tree, and the bird goes on the tree. In an instant he catches the fruit, and it will take a long time for the ant to go and reach that fruit. What is known as the Pipilika Marg and the Vihangama Marg. Zeno was incapable of taking his stand, that the hare can take jumps, while the tortoise cannot take jumps. The tortoise has to move from point to point, and it must toil and toil, just as the ant has to toil and toil. While the bird comes from and immediately, on the instant, sits on the fruit. So there is what cannot be done by an ant can be done in no time by a bird. What cannot be done by a tortoise can be done by the asterisk. So there is the continuity there, and there is the discontinuity. Whether the discontinuity is more important or the continuity is more important, we cannot say. But in practical life we find that the jumps are more important. You do not touch the ground at all, you see. That is why the aeroplane goes at 500 miles, at least an hour. 500 miles. And people are thinking, no doubt, even today, that they should be raised to 1,000 miles, so that they compete with the speed of the earth, of the rotation, and they can have perpetual day or perpetual night. Of course, we have to wait for some time before it comes true. But I am just pointing out the fact that these philosophers, these 24 philosophers, have failed to search and take note of them. I shall make mention of them in a short time and then proceed with them. Then we come to Plato, and he says the sensible world is the mind of the ideal world. What does it mean? It means that he has made a bifurcation of the two things. That the sensible world does not contain what is contained in the ideal world. The ideal world is a transcendental world, and the sensible world is a world of perishable things. That is what Plato means. The sensible world is a reminder of that ideal world. Why should it be a reminder of that ideal world? Why should not this ideal world come and be immanent in the sensible world? Plato has failed to take note of the fact that the reality is immanent also. And that clue has been taken by Aristotle. Aristotle has followed Plato unconsciously, I believe, that he thinks of God as transcendent in nature. He thinks of God as being beyond the clouds. And what of this earth? What of matter? He thinks matter is abstract. Matter does not exist. Now, Aristotle also is making a mistake in his statement of philosophy. What is the mistake? In the first place, he says there is nothing in the world which does not consist of matter and form together. All right? You are taking note of the spatio-temporal dimensions of the world. You are considering of existence in the spatial and the temporal aspects of the world. And now you speak of pure form beyond space and time, and you speak of matter within space and time. How can they be? There is a clear-cut contradiction in Aristotle's thought. Matter as such is abstraction. Matter, where is it? It is in space and time. And what are you thinking of pure form? It is non-spatial and non-temporal in character. So is there any correspondence? Is there any commensurability between the two? Matter and form. Why should you say that the pure form is matterless? You see, he also makes the same mistake as Plato has done, namely of dividing the two things between transcendent immanence, and he is satisfied with transcendence of God, namely living beyond the world, beyond the clouds. Why is he not immanent? That is one. And secondly, why do you make the difference between non-spatial and non-temporal so far as pure form is concerned? And all material things as combination of matter and form? He starts with that. There is nothing in the world which does not consist of matter and form. And why do you say then that pure form and pure matter, matter is nothing and form is everything? Is there not a contradiction in Aristotle? Aristotle has failed. Then we come, of course, now make an exception with Plotinus. Because Plotinus' mysticism, if you understand the mysticism on the Indian side also. So, accepting Plotinus, all have failed. We go to Augustine, Saint Anselm, and Thomas Aquinas. I told you especially about Thomas Aquinas that he was divided between two camps. He had his heart upon church and he had head upon Aristotle. You see, he thought that Aristotle was correct, and yet he was interested more in the church. You see, such a half-hearted, you see, allegiance to church is wrong. Either you are a philosopher and downright like Hume, cut everything on your way, or be a steadfast follower of the church and say that all philosophy is nothing but nonsense, moonshine. Aquinas had no courage like that. And he too has failed in saying that I am with Aristotle and I am with the church. And you say to us plainly whether you are for church or for Aristotle. And he could not say. That was his failure. You see, we come to modern philosophy, namely Descartes and Bacon. Bacon was correct, at least, in saying that our whole life must be divided into two parts, alternatively, on contemplation and activity. Contemplation, activity. Bacon too has failed. Why should you not have contemplation while you are active? And why should you not be active when you are contemplating? Is not contemplation a form of activity? You ask these questions to Bacon, and Bacon will have no answer. He said that contemplation and activity should alternate each other. That is, after meditation, after contemplation, you should have activity. And after activity, you should have... Now, in a society like us, when I am contemplating, you are active, and you will blame me for being inactive. And while I am active and you are meditating, I will have a similar blame to you. Meaning, all men in the world should contemplate at the same time. Or some men. And should they necessarily be contemplative and active alternatively or simultaneously? If Bacon is not capable of having the two at the same time, then Bacon has failed. Descartes too has failed because he has made God a derivative principle. It is an innate idea. Born with the mind. Have the babies innate idea in them? Do they know what is meant by God? Not in the least. So Descartes has made a great mistake by saying that God is a derivative principle from the self. Go to Spinoza. He has topsy-turvy. You see, he started with the substance, that which is to be shown. You see, he has started with that. It is a case of Pitisho Principi. Whole philosophy is nothing but the example of Pitisho Principi. That which we want to prove, that you take it for granted at the beginning, namely substance. You try with the definition, arbitrary definition of it. Of course, he has given a very good explanation. I have told you about the good points of them all. I am telling them about the weak points now. Remember that. Spinoza has failed on account of his definition, of his method itself. That what you wish to prove, you have started at the beginning. That is what is known as the fallacy of Pitisho Principi. His entire philosophy is an illustration of the fallacy of Pitisho Principi. Then with who? Leibniz. Leibniz, of course, has something to do.
I can't blame him to that extent, you see, as I have been blaming others. You see, not his pre-established harmony is of importance, but his conception of the central monad, monas monadam, as he calls it, that is of importance. And if we forget that, then all these monads will be as if fluttering in the air. Sutre manigana, as the Bhagavad Gita says. He wanted a sutra, a thread on which the beads should stand. And these monads are nothing but the several hundreds and infinite beads on the central thread, on the central telephone exchange, namely a god. That is an excellent point in Lamination Road. But so far as the mirroring capacity of the monads are concerned, or the pre-established harmony is concerned, how can there be pre-established harmony? Whether God is first or whether the beads are first, that he has not said. When you speak of the central monad, then it means that all the monads are there first, without God, and God has come afterwards to occupy the chair of the central exchange officer. Is that the meaning of? There he has failed. Or if God is first and he has created them, he has not said a word about creation. So, from this point of view, even who has failed, Lebanese also has failed. And then comes our empirical school, Locke. I pay very, very scant attention to Locke, because a man who tries to please all pleases none. Locke tries to please all. Yes, all right, it is idea, it is an idea, mind-framed idea. God is a complex idea, mind-framed idea. Of course, those who are maybe satisfied having broad common sense, let them be satisfied, but I am not satisfied with Locke at all, because he has tried to please all by saying all the ideas are welcome. How can it be? If you love all or hate all, can you love all? Impossible. That is a vain ideal of Buddha, for example. That is, or of hatred. You can't hate all. You have some whom you love and you have some whom you hate. Therefore, Locke wants to please all by saying that every idea is welcome. Simple ideas, complex ideas, mind-framed ideas, every idea. He is only trying to please all. Such a policy will not do in philosophy. You must say which is most superior idea, supreme idea. And all these ideas are derivative. How they flow from each other? Locke has not shown this. God is not supreme, God is not the insignificant thing also. Let him say that God is not there at all. I shall welcome it. But God is like any other idea, like the tables and everything. Matter is real, mind is real, God is real, everything is real in this world. What does this mean? And if a man or another man says, matter is unreal, God is unreal, what is the difference between the two? One man saying all is real, another man saying all is unreal. What is the difference between the two? What have you to say clearly? How do you prove it? Locke has not done so. He is no doubt, it is good that he has made a classification of primary ideas and secondary ideas, and afterwards of the substance. But where do the secondary ideas come from? Primary ideas. And from what source? The substance. And from substance from what? He has no reply to that. This is our debate of Locke, the British empiricist. Berkeley was a bishop. Naturally, as like Thomas Aquinas, he had a robe of bishop, and therefore he had more to judge, otherwise he would have been dismissed. So before Berkeley also there was a great problem. He would have been a solipsist, meaning I alone am in a world of phantoms. That was on one hand, the difficulty. On the other hand, there was the difficulty. If he had said this, then Berkeley alone is real in all the world. And what would he say in the church? All of you are phantoms, and Berkeley alone is real. Will that be allowed by church? You are a bishop, you must have your fellowship with all people in the members of the church. That is your first duty, so that you can't be a solipsist. I am real in a world of phantoms. This was not possible for Berkeley to say. Though he was carried to that point of extreme of being a solipsist, you see. The subjectivism would have saved, but he was saved by being a bishop. He has not saved. He could not save. And suppose of subjectivism, what would have been his fate? He would not have said.
Bhagavad Gita, the realization of God, the philosophy of the God realization, as you see, philosophy of God realization. You become a deist first for some time, you become an atheist afterwards, and you become a mystic again. This is the philosophy of God realization according to Professor Dharali. According to Radhakrishnan, it is theism of the Bhagavad Gita. Meaning, God is different from you. If God is different from you, then let him be different from me. What harm is there? Similarly, God is remaining above the clouds. It is remaining above the clouds as a matter of fact. St. Augustine says he has brought it. Because St. Augustine or Anselm, or you can say Thomas Aquinas, the medieval philosophers, are more interested in the church than in the state and philosophy. They are Christians first and philosophers afterwards. I would like you to be philosophers first and Christians at the same time. I don't mean to say that you should be Hindus only. You should be God intoxicated. And whether you are Mohammedans or whether you are Christians or whether you are Hindus or anybody else, any denomination, it doesn't matter. But you be devoted to God. When you are at the same time, you can say, men in this practical world of our sensible world. So, Saint Augustine makes Aristotelism a little attenuated, a changed, and he says that Plotinus is correct in saying that the all soul has to rise to the status of the nous, and the nous has to rise to the status of